Do the Beloit Relays today. We have coverage starting with a report at 10 o'clock. As long as we get done by 10 o'clock, we got a lot to cover on the Sports Ticket. We'll try.
Yeah, 82nd annual Beloit Relay set for today. 33 teams are competing, 12 in the upper division, 21 in the lower division. So, again, nearly 700 athletes are competing and almost 1,400 total entries here today. There are 17 different athletes that have top-ranked events in the state coming into the meet. 10 of them are returning state champions as well in certain events, and we'll go over some of that as we go through the day here coming up later today. We did have a chance to talk with Beloit Trojan track and field coach Ryan Isbell to preview the Beloit relays, and one of the things he notes is that there is some outstanding competition here this year and a chance for some records to be broken today.
Bringing in almost 700 athletes and almost 1,400 different entries that they're going to be competing in. You know, the great thing about this meet is that you get to see such a wide variety of schools in terms of classification from 1A to 4A. Some kids that you don't normally get to see at all. And overall, the competition looks really, really strong, kind of in every division, both boys and girls. 3A, 4A, which the guys' side, there's been some really good times and distances that have been put out there, even considering what we've dealt with the wind and everything else this spring. But it looks like there's about five upper division boys' records that'll kind of be in jeopardy of being broke.
Again, today also, Coach Isbell kind of chatting about how much his kids enjoy going to the Beloit Relays, and the teams that come here usually can learn a lot about themselves.
A lot of surrounding schools kind of earmark this particular meet as kind of their stepping stone, kind of see where are we at, what can we do down the road at league regionals and state. And our kids absolutely love competing at home. They look forward to it all year long. You kind of go through a little grind, you know, middle of the season there, not getting set practices in and going to some meets and not really getting to work on, you know, your events and just focusing on them. And when we hit this week, you know, we finally get a week leading up to it where we can get in a little more routine and the kids just settle in. And I know they're excited.
Again, coming up today, the Beloit Relays, the 82nd annual running of the Beloit Relays. Again, we'll hope to have a report at 10 o'clock. If not, then our first one would be at 10:30. We'll see how all that goes, but we'll be listening at 10, and after that, we'll have reports every half hour throughout the day here from the Beloit Relays. They're going to try to do live results today at ncastsports.com. There's a link posted for that, and I'll have my Google Drive updated with medalists from today as well. You can always follow me on at Dusty40 on Twitter as well for some other info about the Beloit Relays here today. So stay tuned for all that.
Yeah, and then pretty big news for Beloit for a local young lady that apparently channeled her inner Chris Paul.
Yeah, Chloe Odell, perfect yesterday.
Perfect
game for the Beloit Trojans in the Lady Trojans' second softball game against Sylvan Lucas Lincoln yesterday. Pitched five innings. It was a 5-0 win there. 14 of the 20, or actually would have been 7 innings, 14 of the 21 outs were strikeouts, and Odell has 4 shutouts this season, 3 no-hitters, 37 innings pitched, a .19 ERA, 68 strikeouts on her season. But again, the 7-inning perfect game yesterday as, again, Beloit wins that one by a final of 5-0 in the first game, and then the second game actually was the 5-0 score. The first game, they won 15-1 over Lincoln Sylvan Lucas in 5 innings. So that's a look at what happened yesterday in softball.
If you don't know what a perfect game is, for those listening, perfect game means nobody reached base. Nobody. No error, no walk, no hit batter, no hits. Nobody reached. Perfect game for Chloe Little yesterday, and she is, I saw her the other night, and I wouldn't try to hit her. I tell you what, I saw her fastball, and she locates it so well, and then if she throws a changeup, you're getting flying out of your shoes, man. Your left shoulder's in the dugout to the third base side because you're so far ahead of it, so. And Beloit's got a couple of really good pitchers, but Chloe Odell, man, what a performance yesterday. That's pretty doggone cool.
Yeah, I would say Kimberly Nichols wasn't chopped liver yesterday.
I saw Kimberly Nichols pitch the other day. She did a wonderful job and has a nasty changeup as well. So Kimberly Nichols would be probably the star pitcher on most teams in the league, but,
sure,
but Chloe Odell
sure
is really, really good. They're both good. It's great to have a 1-2 combination, and it'll be fun to follow the rest of the year. If you got great pitching, you got a chance no matter who you play when it comes to baseball or softball. So congratulations. I'd say Chloe's the leader in the clubhouse for Athlete of the Week honors, possibly next week.
Yeah.
Possibly. But
unless
could
somebody
be other
goes wild today at the relays or something like that,
possible.
You know, there's always that possibility.
We could also have multiple Athletes of the Week. That's possible as well. All right. Any other sports you want to pass
along? I just want to let everybody know schedule for today. Obviously, this this is all pending and depending on what happens with the weather and in various areas here in North Central Kansas. But Beloit and softball and baseball are scheduled to be at Abilene today, 4:30 start time this afternoon for the doubleheaders, and Concordia softball and baseball hosting Minneapolis today. You can find results from high school golf yesterday at ncksports.com as well.
All right, we're going to get Dusty's quick thoughts on the Chiefs picks real quick before we got to get him out of here. But here was the first pick at NFL draft last night in Las Vegas. As I accurately predicted, one by one as this draft was unraveling, I got the first eight picks correct. I did.
Even London could be in the first wide receiver.
Yes, yeah. I did. No, wait a minute. That's not right. I got the first six picks. I got the first eight out of ten. Okay. Eight out of ten I got right. I quit after ten.
Yeah.
Because then there was a trade and everything. I had eight. I got the first six right, and then I missed at seven, and then I got eight wrong. Because I think I put Jameson Williams, and then I got 9 and 10 right. And I said, why don't I get paid a lot of money?
Yeah.
I mean, I got eight of the 10. I had Walker 1, and I said Hutchinson's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And then I said the Texans are going to take either Gardner or Stingley. I think Stingley. And then I said Sauce is coming up for the Jets. And Noah's, my oldest son, is sitting there going, wow, that's pretty good. You know. And then of course, I said it'll fall apart real quickly. But here was the first pick last night.
With the first pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Trayvon Walker, linebacker, Georgia.
Then Aiden Hutchinson went number two, and that's perfect for him, from Michigan going to Detroit. And then, as I said, DB, corner Derek Stingley Jr. of LSU went three to the Texans. Sauce, Ahmad Gardner of Cincinnati, second corner on the board, he went number four to the Jets. Defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau was the fifth pick by the Giants. Pick seven in six, seven, and nine were all offensive tackles. Kid from NC State went number six to the Panthers. Evan Neal, Alabama, went to the Giants at seven. Charles Cross of Mississippi State went nine to the Seahawks. Drake London of USC was first receiver picked, as Jason said that would happen, going to the Falcons at number eight. I knew it was a receiver going to the Falcons. I had the wrong one. Ohio State wide receiver Garrett Wilson was a 10th pick by the Jets. His teammate Chris Olave went to the Saints, who traded up to 11. I thought they gave up a lot to get to him. The Lions moved up 20 spots and traded to number 12 and got Alabama wide receiver Jameis Williams. That's a guy that a lot of the Chiefs fans wanted. Kenny Pickett, first quarterback taking the draft, and he'll stay right there in Pittsburgh. That's perfect, as he played at Pittsburgh College there with the Panthers, and now he's going University of Pittsburgh. Now he's with the Steelers. And then right after that, the Chiefs traded up. We talked yesterday about how they would probably trade up 29-20. I mentioned the Steelers as a trade partner if they don't want a quarterback. Instead, missed it by one pick. They traded up with the Patriots from 29-21, and the Chiefs made this pick.
The New England Patriots have traded the 21st pick to the Kansas City Chiefs. With the 21st pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select Trent McDuffie, defensive back, Washington.
McDuffie was a third-team All-American in 2021, first-team All-Pac-12 pick, 35 tackles, 4 for loss, 6 passes defense his junior year. The Chiefs get up 29th pick as well as a 94th pick in the third round, 121st pick in the fourth to move up 8 spots to get McDuffie. Then the Chiefs did keep their pick at number 30, and they made this selection.
With the 30th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select George Karlaftis, defensive end, Purdue.
And just like McDuffie produced, Karlaftis came out after his junior year as well. He had 10 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks, first team All-Big Ten performer in his final season, 14 career sacks in 3 years with Purdue. Chiefs general manager Brett Veach on adding two defensive guys in the first round.
Certainly thought the board kind of fell like we thought, and it typically does in most first rounds. But needless to say, we're super excited to add two really good players and two guys that we can add to this defense and continue to grow that unit. And I think the cool thing about both Trent and George are, I think they're both 21 years old and young guys, a lot of upside, do things the right way. And like I said, just really excited to add them to our defensive unit.
All right, Dusty, before we let you go, get your thoughts, and Jason, I'll talk about it after you leave, but the Chiefs moving up 8 spots to get a corner. Nobody saw the corner being the position they trade up to get. I know I didn't. And then they get a pass rusher, an edge rusher, out of Purdue at 30. And they've got plenty of picks left. They 8 more picks left, although 4 are seventh rounders. They have 2 in the second round tonight, 1 in the third, 1 in the fourth, 3 in the seventh on Saturday. Second round of the draft starts tonight at 6 o'clock in Las Vegas.
I don't know if they could have got the corner there, McDuffie, at the regular spot. They probably seemed like they probably couldn't, so they moved up to get him. And again, when you have the flexibility to do that, it makes it easier as a fan to understand, hey, we got a lot of draft picks, we've got capital. They didn't have to give up both first-round picks to move up in the draft, which they would have had they moved way up like they were talking about if they wanted a receiver or something like that. And so I like that part of it. And seems like a really good dude, good head on his shoulders and ready to go, it feels like, and ready to get out there and play. And then Karloftis, I think a lot of people were surprised that he was still available there. And so what we kind of, you and I kind of earmarked as the important priorities for the Chiefs really mm-hmm. were edge and cornerback.
On defense.
And that's who they got. And I wasn't ever sold that they were going to trade up and take a wide receiver. And I don't think anybody was in this particular room. So I like what they did. They've obviously addressed some needs and didn't have to give up like an overly large amount to move up from 29 to 21 to get the corner McDuffie. So I don't have a problem with it. I like it.
I trust Brad Veach, but I got quick thoughts on this. McDuffie, first of all, when people say, well, they could have traded it and got him at 25. Well, you have to have a willing partner.
Yeah, that's the key on all that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know you can trade him. Make sure you get the guy. And obviously, you didn't think he'd be there at 29. People say, well, he could have been there at 29. Well, if there's a guy you really like, you can't just go, I think he'll be there at 29. You just go get him. And they did that. Just like with Mahomes, they moved up 17 spots way back, and they got him, and that worked out well. The only knock I have on McDuffie is 5'10".
Yeah.
I want a
yeah.
bigger corner. I mean,
yeah.
the Chiefs go from Charvarius Ward, who's a taller, more lanky corner, to McDuffie, who's going to start as a corner, it looks like, on the edge. So that's the only question I have. He didn't make a lot of plays on the ball. Didn't get a lot of interceptions. That concerns me a little bit. Last Washington corner the Chiefs drafted was Marcus Peters. He turned out to be pretty good and then had his issues, but he was a ball hawk. This
yeah.
guy not necessarily.
He had six
is.
Passes defense, too, and, I, yeah. and part of that might be they don't want to go to him
could
either.
Could be. The one thing, a couple things I like about him, he's versatile. They can move him yeah. around. He can blitz. He can play slot corner. He can play on the edge. I like that.
Seemed to be able to open field tackle on the
yes,
highlights.
Yes, he looks like he tackles
well,
pretty well.
So that's a plus. Important. And can move into the slot, too, if he needs to.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the pick at number 30, I'm not sold on this one. I'm okay with them going with an edge rusher, but I don't know, man. He's got a motor. That's good. He's got mm-hmm. a motor, but he's not super fast. I think he's a guy that's going to have to be rotated in on passing downs. They said he actually at times played better on the inside and the outside, and he's only 266 weight-wise. I'm not sold on this pick. I think this is a guy that they talked about last night, the short arms. If long arm tackles get him, he ain't going to be able to do much, and he had problems in the mm-hmm. Big Ten. Well, he's going to have problems in the NFL. He had problems in the Big Ten, and he only had 4.5 sacks last year. And only 14 in his career. So I'm not sold on this pick, to be quite honest with you. There were other guys that I thought they could have gone with that were edge rushers mm-hmm. that they could have got with pick 30. I'm not enamored with the pick out of Purdue. I'm really not. And some people had him higher in their drafts, and others had him as a mid-second-round pick. So that tells me there's a wide diversity of opinions on this guy,
yeah.
which means he's not a star.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? At pick 30, you're probably not getting a star, but then again, you can get second, third, fourth-round picks that turn into stars. We don't know. I'll trust Brett Veach on this one.
That's what I got to do because
yeah.
they had identified him and
right.
were surprised he was still there, and
right.
that's why they took him.
They like his motor,
yeah.
that's for sure. So we'll see, but I'm not overly sold on that one. But they did. I'm glad they didn't reach for a receiver.
Yeah,
let's put it that way. And Aaron Rodgers is mad again because they didn't draft a receiver in the first round for the 20th year in a row for the Packers. Okay,
he's actually okay with it from the interview that he had with Pat McAfee last night.
Sure, so. He is. So two picks in the second round tonight. Listen, there's going to be a wide receiver there if they want him.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Watson might be there. George Pickens is one from Georgia. A lot of people like Mechie from Alabama. It might be there. There's all kinds of receivers. Sky Moore might be there. I personally would be okay if they don't take a receiver with that first pick in the second round this year or tonight and go another edge.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second round tonight, for me personally, I want them to get one of those guys, probably a receiver, and then get another edge. Because I don't think the guy from Purdue solves all our problems.
No,
not
at all. Not
even close.
Whether if he does pan out,
yeah,
that's not a solution to the whole thing.
No. So that's where I like them to go. There are a lot of really good players that are still on the board going into day two like they normally are. So
yeah, for sure.
Let's hear from – we'll let Dusty go. Dusty, thank you very much. We'll look forward to your reports coming up here in a little while. Here's Brett Veach talking about how these guys are going to be ready to go come NFL time.
It's funny because every year we go through what we think – or every scenario possible, and we didn't go over McDuffie's scenario. I don't think we thought he'd be there, and certainly some of the trades and even the player trades that happened today, I think, impacted that. But Trent's a guy that can come in here day one. I mean, he's wired the right way, extreme, you know, knowledge of the game, three-year player, three-year starter. And it was, you know, certainly a position that we wanted to address. And then you talk about George, you know, I'm sure you saw his interview. This is a guy that didn't play a lot of football, came on strong at Purdue, another young guy that has a ton of upside, can play a little inside and outside for Steve, and relentless motor. And again, just a guy like Trent that's going to come in and be ready to contribute on day one.
That's your manager, Brett Veach of the Chiefs. His thoughts on the two picks last night at 21 and 30. What does Andy Reid think?
I think when it's all said and done, I'm not, you know, it's hard to predict the future of any of these guys, but these guys are wired the right way for beginners, and then we'll see how they function on the football field. So they've still got that challenge ahead, coming into a championship caliber team and, you know, having a show. So I look forward to that, though.
So Andy Reid is excited. That's as excited as he gets after draft picks there. There's not a single general manager or head coach after the first round or even after the draft and say, man, we really struck out here.
We used to tease a friend. The day after, he'd always say, well, my guy, he was a Ravens fan. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, Ozzie Newsome said they were first guy on the board. You picked 18th. You know, it wasn't the first guy on the board. You know,
it was their first remaining guy on the board.
Right, yeah. But yeah, they always do that. They always make the best guy at the position, whatever. You know, but what are you gonna say? What do you say? We
struck out on that one.
We kind of reached
on that one.
Yeah.
Did you see the Rams head coach in another one, the press conference? They thought the guy that the Patriots took in the first round be available at a pick 104. I go, well, glad we spent time researching that. And they started laughing. Made you wonder if they'd been drinking or something, but it was pretty funny stuff. There are some very notable guys that are still available for the draft here today. I'll tell you a few that you might want to look out for if you're a Chiefs fan. There is Boye Mafe, who is an edge from Minnesota. A lot of people had the Chiefs maybe taken at 30. He's still out there. Whether he'll be there when the Chiefs pick with number 50, because the Chiefs have 50 and 62 tonight in the second round. They have pick 18 in the second round, pick 30. So near the end. Oh, this darn cord gets caught on my chair, and I can almost strangle myself. I don't want to do that. And I got a buzz in my ear as well. But pick 18, which is 50, which is one of the picks they got in the Tyreek Hill trade, and they got pick 30 tonight. So they got picks 50 and 62 overall, two second-round draft picks the Chiefs have here tonight. They could trade up, maybe, and get a guy they really like for earlier than 50. They could possibly, you know, grab one at 50, trade out of their second-round pick tonight. Who knows? But there are some notable guys out there, and I'll tell you a few that are intriguing to me. Mafe, edge rusher from Minnesota, is intriguing to me. If he's there at 50, I think the Chiefs would definitely consider taking another edge. I think the Chiefs need another edge rusher. George Pickens, wide receiver at Georgia. I don't think he's going to be there at 50, but if he is, that might be a guy the Chiefs want to go after. Jalen Petrie is a safety of Baylor. Some people say he reminds some people of Tyrann Mathieu, and we know how great a career he's had in NFL. I don't think the Chiefs need another safety, so I doubt. But if that's the best player on the board, they might. I doubt it. Kyler Gordon. Some people say Kyler Gordon, cornerback from Washington on the other side of McDuffie. They thought he might have been the better pick, that the Chiefs could have stayed at 29 taking Gordon instead of moving up to get McDuffie. But clearly, Brett Veach and the Chiefs really like McDuffie, so they went and got him. There's edge rusher Penn State, Ibikati. I mean, there's another edge that's out there, possibly. But I'll tell you, and there's Christian Watson, wide receiver, North Dakota State, Sky Moore, Western Michigan, that's out there. You mentioned Trey McBride, tight end, Colorado State. Breece Hall of Iowa State, highly thought of. Kenneth Walker, great running back, Michigan State, still on the board. But I'll give you a name that is very, very intriguing.
I think we're probably going the same way here.
And that's David Ajabo from Michigan. This is a guy that was going to be a top 15 pick. He ruptured his Achilles in the combine. Now, he's probably going to have to sit out most, if not all, of this year. But if he keeps sliding, and who knows, maybe he'll slide all the way to the third round. But in the third round, the Chiefs, I think that's not a bad pick. And the Chiefs, I know they have needs, but if they can fill a few of those needs defensively before having to take Ajabo, if he's the best upside, that might be a guy the Chiefs can take. They're not a team that is in desperate need of having to win right away, trying to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, turn everything around. The Chiefs have a very solid team as it is now. Do they have some holes they want to fill? Sure. But Ojabo is a very intriguing pick because he's rated 44th by CBS Sports. He's 15th of the best prospects available. So if you go 15, if it went in that order, then the Chiefs would be sitting there, you know, three picks away from Ojabo if they wanted him. Or he might fall all the way to the end of round two. Or maybe the Chiefs, he's there at pick 55, and the Chiefs like, you know what, we can move from 62 to 55 and take him. But the problem with that is he's probably going to have to sit out a year. Our Chiefs fans are going to be okay with drafting a guy in the second or third round that will more than likely have to miss a year coming off of a ruptured Achilles. I think that's a big risk for people, and I think Ojabo might very well fall to the third round.
It's a risk I'm willing to take in the Kansas City Chiefs situation, where it sits at 15 on this list for today. There were a lot of early in the process, he was about 15 overall.
Yes.
So he would have been 15 in the first
round. Some people thought he might get him top 10.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I like the pick. And if you get 10, 15 plays out of him in the playoff run, if he can come back healthier, Achilles are tough. And on one hand, that they're getting better at doing this, and it's a quicker comeback, and it's a more stable comeback, especially for football players. At the same time, there's still no guarantee on that. Yeah. So, you know, if you get him and he can give you 10-15 at the end of the playoff run, go ahead.
I don't think you can count on that. I think when you draft him, you have to assume he's going to sit out a whole year because you don't want to bring him back in a playoff run. That's a whole different level of football for a rookie. I don't think you'd put that guy in that situation. Now, maybe he could come back late in the regular season and get himself amped up. And maybe. Guys can recover sooner from things than we've seen ever before. He might be able to come back sooner. He might be a freak of nature. I mean, Cam Akers, so the Rams came back 6 months after rupturing his Achilles and played in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. So that's possible. I'll give you a couple other names to think about. Nick Bonito, Clover's well aware of this guy, edge rusher from Oklahoma. That's a guy that the Chiefs might be interested in. And I'll give you one more to think about, and that is Jeremy Ruckert from Ohio State. I saw him play this year. You know, he played against better competition than Colorado State did with McBride, and that might be a guy the Chiefs look at as a future, you know, replacement for Travis Kelce or a second pass-catching tight end, although it depends on how much they like Noah Gray, who they drafted out of Duke. So the Chiefs, no doubt, still have some flexibility. We said they're not going to make 12 picks. They're not.
Nope.
They gave up 3 picks for 1 to move up 8 spots. But they have 2 picks in the second round here tonight. Be pick 50 overall, pick 62, and then they will pick third. In the third round, they have pick 103, which will be late third round. And then they have 1 pick, which is late fourth round. So this is really, I said it yesterday, I think I was more intrigued. I didn't think the Chiefs would trade up to get a receiver. None of us did here at the station. I am really intrigued with what the Chiefs do tonight, starting at 6 o'clock, with their 2 second-round picks and a third-round pick. But in particular, that second round, they got basically a mid-second and a late second. Do they package and move up to get a guy? I think that's probably a mistake because now that you've given up a couple of draft picks, I think you need to have a few more darts to throw at the board in regards to fill some needs. For me, I would go edge and wide receiver. If there's guys there that you like, I'd go edge and wide receiver tonight in the second. And the third, I would probably be looking at I could be looking at offensive line. I could be looking at another corner possibly. That's what I'd be looking at.
When you're this close and you have for the Chiefs, fairly glaring needs over other positions.
Corner and edge pass rusher are the biggest.
So
I don't even know if wide receivers.
Yeah,
a glaring
I don't know if
need.
It's a huge need, but yeah. It could be a luxury, I guess. But say just for example, maybe you pick like Mechie or something in the second round somewhere. Then, like you said, maybe another rush and, you know, maybe the best rusher available. And then the rest of the draft where you have these extra picks, why not flood corner and rush edge or defensive line or however you want to do it and see what sticks you know, take an extra couple guys there, see what sticks. Maybe you find a diamond in the rough. Maybe you find depth that, you know, allows you to Tyreek Hill a veteran later, right, you know, down the line to save even more cap space. I don't, you know, I don't, I just, you know, it's, you're, they're in, it's hard when they're in a, I mean, it's, you'd rather be in a Kansas City Chiefs spot than a lot of other teams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, it gets a little bit harder when you only have a couple of needs. They were just talking about the Buffalo Bills, and they're like, well, you know, I don't know exactly what they need. And, you know, so they found a, you know, a corner and stuff like that. And so, about the receiver, once the Saints traded up for Olave, I was like, yeah, receiver's out of the picture for the Chiefs.
Well, and I predicted that yesterday, yeah, that there's going to be a huge run on receivers, and there was. Yeah. I mean, there was, what was it, 6 or 8 receivers that went in the first round, and there was a run, and the Saints traded up. I thought the Saints gave up too much for Olave. Wilson, I think, is a great pick for the Jets at 10. Drake London, you know, we'll see. He was hurt for part of last year, but he was very productive for the Falcons. My question is, who's going to throw him the ball? Marcus Mariota is their quarterback right now. And then Jamison Williams, a lot of people thought the Chiefs would be the ones to move all the way up to get Jamison Williams and give up a lot of draft capital. And oddly enough, it was the Detroit Lions who went from 32 to 12. The other thing that stands out is only one quarterback was drafted. That was Kenny Pickett, the Pittsburgh at 20. A lot of talk about Malik Willis, the quarterback from Liberty. He didn't even get drafted. So, you know, I think Seattle's a team that's got to think about quarterback. Carolina still could think about quarterback. And that's going to impact what happens with Baker Mayfield in regards to a trade, because I don't think he's going to be on the Browns roster on opening day. It wouldn't be a very wise decision if you're the Browns. And then I'm trying to look if there's anything else. Well, the Patriots, I thought, was a major reach. And then the other thing about last night, there were 9 trades. And remember we talked yesterday about mock drafts to be blown up with trades? Mm-hmm. I thought the first trade was going to come at 7 with the Giants, and instead it came at 11 with the Saints. And then it just started going. There were 9 trades in the final 22 picks last night. That's a record for the first round since 2010 when they went to this format. And the Chiefs aren't the only ones. First of all, it was the Packers that didn't want to pay Davante Adams all that money. Davante Adams wanted to go to be with Derek Carr. So the Raiders gave a ton of money for Davante Adams. Okay, then it was Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs wanted to pay him, but then the price went up when Davante Adams got that big deal with the Raiders. So the Chiefs said, there's a point we got to stop. They did. They traded Tyreek Hill. By the way, the Chiefs got more for Tyreek Hill than the teams got for their star wide receivers last night. The Titans then decided they were trying to give A.J. Brown his money. A.J. Brown didn't even he stopped communicating with them. He didn't attend the voluntary workouts. Titans are like, okay, we're going to move on. So the Titans traded A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles immediately signed him in a $100 million deal, $57 million guaranteed, $25 million per year, which is lower than Adams and Hill. But for the Eagles, that looks good on paper. But the Titans then turn around and get Treylon Burks from Arkansas. So they could go with a guy that's similar in build. They like what he can do, and he's a lot cheaper. So the Titans, and they got a fourth round pick out of that, which the Chiefs got a lot more for their wide receiver, Tyreek Hill, than they did. And then Hollywood Brown was traded, a former Sooner, from Baltimore to Arizona to team up with his former quarterback Kyler Murray with the Cardinals. And the Ravens, the Ravens, they drafted Brown 25 a few years ago. I think it was, or 23, and then they draft 25 this year, so you get 3 years of Hollywood Brown, then they trade him for the same equivalent pick and get an extra pick and don't have to pay him any kind of extension. So two high-profile receivers, both named Brown, one Hollywood that's not as good as the actual A.J. Brown, but those guys leave, and so teams are simply saying, listen, wide receivers deep in this draft. And if you don't want to play for us and you think you're worth $25 to $30 million, that's great and all. You're going to have to get it somewhere else.
Yeah, go find someone to pay you. And yeah, that's fine.
Which I think that's why I still think the Chiefs, what they did, makes sense. And I think it makes sense what the Titans did too. And that's interesting. That's the top 2 seeds from the AFC last year that got rid of their biggest, most explosive weapons in trades because they didn't want to pay them. They wanted to pay them, but they weren't willing to pay the rate that those guys wanted.
Yeah.
There was a point of no return. Very interesting.
Yeah, and some other little things. New York teams had 5 picks in the first round. It ended up 5
picks. The Jets traded in for
no comedy. No comedy. I thought they all
did
well.
Pretty good picks, yeah. Yeah, Thibodeau, I think, probably a good pick.
And we missed out on the best comedy of all. If the Packers would have taken Willis there at the end. Oh, I know it wasn't real, but, you know, if they just would have redone what they did with Malik Willis with Jordan Love. That would have been funny, too.
Yeah, I'm turning towards the mic a little bit there. You're trailing off.
Hindsight being 2020, you know, once the Chiefs made the trade for McDuffie, mm-hmm. I thought that was really good. I thought, receiver was now a pipe dream as far as one of the top five or six guys. Yeah. So, all right, find the next need was corner, rush.
Yep.
They got the corner. I like the pick. I think he's going to be fine. Now, there's Jermaine Johnson that fell.
Yeah.
You know, hindsight being 2020.
Yeah,
hindsight being 2020. If you knew he was going to go down to 26, you know, maybe that trade up could have been for him. But I don't know if at that point he thought he was going to go all the way. I don't know.
Johnson is 24 years of age, whereas the two guys the Chiefs drafted are 21, from what I understand. So, you know, all in all, I'm not going to say I'm critical of the draft. I mean, we have no idea. I'm going to trust Veach and the GMs doing their work. But this is still an incomplete grade because they still got more picks to make tonight. And I'm really intrigued by what the Chiefs are going to do. And there are some very good players that are out there. But I would think after tonight, after if they stay where they are and take the 2 second-round picks and a third, I would think they're going to get one more edge rusher and they're going to get a wide receiver with two of those three picks. Would you agree?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's receiver, corner, and edge rusher.
Yeah.
Again, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there, totally. All right, so the NFL draft continues tonight with the second, third round at 6 o'clock in Vegas. Then around 4 and everything else begins tomorrow there in Las Vegas for the NFL draft. Lost in translation when you have the NFL draft for Chiefs fans and if you're Royals fans is Royals baseball. As the Royals win yesterday, although people watching on television in some situations with Bally Sports, it cut off right before the Royals took the lead yesterday or whatever the case may be. I wasn't watching it. Bally Sports cut it off right at 4:30.
Oh.
So great TV deal the Royals have, but they did win.
And that's going to get away. And here comes Witt down from third. Man. And that ball just simply popped out of McGuire's glove. Well, that takes some pressure off of Isbell.
For sure.
How about a little ground ball at the middle? How about a line drive into left field? That'll get a second run home. Here's Santana, and the throw is offline. Kyle Isbell, with two outs, drives in Benintendi and Santana, and the Royals come up with three on one hit in the 10th inning.
Royals break the 2-2 tie with three in the 10th and win 5-2. Brad Keller outstanding again as he goes 7 innings, allowing just 1 run, 3 hits, but got a no decision. He and Greinke, tough luck starter so far for the boys in blue. Kyle Isbell just called up from AAA, drove in the 2 runs, as you heard there, to make it 5-2. Taylor Clark pitched a perfect bottom of the 10th for his first save of the season with 2 strikeouts. And Scott Barlow finished off as the winner in relief, so pitching a scoreless 9th. The Royals take 2 out of 3 from the White Sox in the series. They're 7-10 now on the year. White Sox drop to 7-11. Mike Matheny on his team coming through in the 10th inning.
In those situations, you know, you're going to need to put up a crooked number and to get the big hit after that. But, yeah, when we could have been sitting here talking about the missed opportunities, and we're going to continue to get better at that. We're going to keep pounding the idea of when we get guys in scoring position, we've got to put pressure on defense. We've got to make them make a play. You guys are fighting through it, but that was just a big win and a good way to finish this road trip.
So the Royals will be back home to start 3-game series against the hated Yankees tonight at 7:10. And oh dear Lord, Chris Bubich is on the hill for the Royals with an ERA of 14.14 in 3 starts. The Yankees are going to score 20 tonight in the first. Alberto Mondesi has been sent to the 10-day IL, but the news got even worse yesterday for Alberto Mondesi. Dusty joked yesterday about his first stint on the IL this season. It will be his one and only. According to reports, he has been diagnosed with a torn left ACL. I feel so sorry for this young man because he worked so hard this offseason to prove everybody wrong he could stay healthy. Played just 35 games last season, just 15 games this year. Apparently tore his left ACL. He's only 26. But he had just 140 in 15 games this year, 5 stolen bases. He is an absolute fantastic 5-tool player when he's right, but he hasn't been right for a while because of the injuries. So Royals recalled Kyle Isbell to play outfield. Of course, he had a key hit, as you heard. Nicky Lopez moves back to short where he was last year. Whit Merrifield, who's more comfortable at second, is back to second. And Brady Singer was sent back to Omaha to get some work and lengthen out as a starting pitcher. The Royals recalled infielder Emmanuel Rivera in his roster spot. Dayton Moore said something yesterday that I am completely confused and perplexed by. He said, Prady Singer's too talented to be in the bullpen. We sent him to AAA to link them out to be a starter. So in 21 days, Brady Singer went from not being talented enough to stay out of the bullpen to being talented enough to stay out of the bullpen. That's a bunch of hogwash. Chris Bubich hasn't performed like you thought, but who thought Bubich was a better starting pitcher than Brady Singer? I haven't thought that ever. And Brady Singer's in the bullpen, and now you say, well, you know, he's too talented to be in the bullpen. Well, if that's the case, then why was he even on this roster? He should have been starting in AAA Omaha and already starting, so he didn't have to go from starter to starter from last year to bullpen this year back to starter. That's a huge change of roles, and that's jerking a pitcher around. And the Royals are doing this because Chris Bubich has been awful. This is why they're getting him ready for that fifth spot in the rotation, is Brady Singer's pitched pretty well in the bullpen. Singer has two pitches. He needs a third. He has two. He can get through the lineup maybe twice, and that makes for a pretty good reliever or a guy that maybe can give you five innings. But he struggles the third time through the lineup. And now you're going to experiment and send him back down to lengthen himself out where he should have been, was to start the year in the minor leagues to work on the third pitch. And still, it's like the Royals gave up on him as a starter in a way, and that's not the way the Royals should be doing it. I know Dayton Moore's made some great moves as GM of the Royals. He's not the GM anymore, technically. It's J.J. Piccolo, but I don't understand that comment whatsoever. I'm completely perplexed and confused when you say a guy is too talented for the bullpen. Well, if that's the case, why did you have him there for the first 21 days of the season? If he's too talented for the bullpen, he either's in your rotation to start the year, or he's in the rotation at AAA Omaha. That's simple.
Here's what I think they were hoping.
Well, I know what they're hoping.
They're hoping Bubich is
they're hoping Bubich reasonable. Could pitch like he did in spring training.
Yeah. They're hoping he is serviceable. 5-6 innings. You know, get through it. If even that. Singer could come in that game and a Bubich game and throw two innings and then get you to the end of your bullpen.
Which is weird because Chris Bubich last year was way more effective as the guy that came in when Daniel Lynch got bombed and he could go six scoreless out of the bullpen. It seems like it's backwards to me.
It does seem backwards. I think they're trying to get that, you know, extra power arm in the bullpen there with Singer. I see what they are trying to do. I don't necessarily agree.
I'm glad you see it because I don't.
Well, there's a difference between understanding and agreeing.
I don't understand it. I didn't understand it to start with. I did not understand it to start with. If the Royals had five starters clearly better than Brady Singer, I get it. I don't know how you can tell me that five starters are clearly better than Brady Singer. And at Brady Singer's age, he's so young. Why are we jerking him to the bullpen? I mean, he has options. Let him work things out, develop a third pitch to be a starting pitcher. It's not like the Royals have tons of starting pitching options to begin with. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And somebody's going to have to explain it better to me than what I saw in the tweet by Dayton Moore yesterday. It wasn't his tweet, but it was his comment.
I don't like the idea of him going back and forth from majors to the minors and then back and forth from reliever to
bullpen. Even worse.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. All right, the NBA playoffs last night. Some teams finished off their series.
Embiid.
Ooh. Ooh.
Joel Embiid.
Ooh.
Soaring back
Make
to the defensive end.
Make them love you, JoJo.
Paul dancing, driving, shooting, scoring, Paul! 14 of 14, 5-point Suns lead.
Oh, if Todd's listening right now, Todd, apparently you, I sent a text to Chris Paul letting him know that, Todd, you're the only person on earth that thinks Chris Paul is only a good point guard and not a great point guard. Former Jayhawk Joel Embiid last night, big closeout game for the Sixers. He had 33 points and 10 rebounds. Sixers rolled the Raptors 132-97. Raptors looked like they ran out of gas. No Fred VanVleet again. They were shorthanded. And give credit to Embiid, and Harden was more aggressive last night. And the Sixers got it done, so don't have to worry about a Game 7 where they could have fallen apart and lost. And then who knows what would have happened. And so the Sixers win that series 4-2. Embiid 12-18 from the floor, 9-10 from the foul line. They'll move on to face the Heat in the second round. And then that just good point guard, not great point guard, Chris Paul, all he did last night in a closeout game on the road in New Orleans at the age of 36. And by the way, next week, Chris Paul had 33 points and did not miss a single shot all night long. 14 of 14 from the floor, 4 for 4 from the line, made his only three-pointer, killed him at the elbow like he always does. You know exactly where Chris Paul wants to get, and his team still can't stop him at the age of 36. That's a great guard. He also added 8 assists, and the Suns move on to face the Mavericks in the second round. More on that in a moment. Paul was plus 17 when he was on the floor last night, meaning the Suns were minus 11 when he didn't play. You don't think he's important? He's super important. Everywhere he goes, teams get better. And once again, in crunch time, he was money. With 4.5 minutes to play, the Suns are down by one. You're thinking, oh boy, might go seven. Go back to Phoenix. By the way, Devin Booker came back and played some, but was rusty. And over the final 4 minutes, Chris Paul assisted or scored on 11 of Phoenix's last 13 points.
I mean, yeah, there's not much left that we have to say about Chris Paul.
No, he's a great point guard. He's one of the without question, he's one of the top 15 point guards of all time, possibly one of the top 10. Some could even argue one of the top five if you want to classify, is Allen Iverson and Steph Curry actually point guards? I don't really think of them as point guards. Neither do Damian Lillard either, by the way. And then, so the Suns move on. They'll face the Mavericks. The Mavericks win. And I saw the end of this game, and listen to this call.
Dallas trying to hold on and move on to the second round. O'Neal, trigger man, toss, cross court. Bogdanović, ball fake. Bogdanović misses on a three ball, and it's over. For the first time since 2011, when the Mavericks won the title, they are advancing in the playoffs.
So I tuned in to this at the very end of the game. I happened to catch. I was checking the score because I was watching the draft. And I saw there was 4 seconds to go, and the Mavericks were ahead, 98-96 in Utah, 4.3 to go. Mavericks up 3-2 in the series. And I want to present to you Exhibit A. Go back and watch the replay of this final shot by the Jazz. And this is why coaches get paid a lot of money and unfortunately don't get enough credit. Quinn Snyder, who used to play at Duke, so it pains me to say that, and he coached at Missouri, which, don't like either one of those universities myself. But anywho, but Quinn Snyder is a really good basketball coach, folks. Last night, everybody's thinking Donovan Mitchell's going to get the ball. It's obviously, the Mavericks thought he was going to get the ball. He's their best player. Jazz season's on the line. They call a timeout. They draw up a play. 98-96. They draw up a play, and if you watch the play, you just heard it. But if you go back and watch it, Donovan Mitchell's a decoy, and they get – it is a perfect play call. It is perfect. It is wide open, and the Maverick guy goes flying out at the three-point shooter on the far side of the floor, Bogdanović, who's a very good three-point shooter. He flies and flows right by him because of the pump fake, which was the right move, and Bogdanović has a full second to line it up. He is that wide open to win the game and force Game 7 in Dallas. Wide open. As a coach, all you want is to give your team a chance. Draw up a play, and then it just goes to show you that I can be a great coach and draw up the greatest plays of all time, but if you miss the layup on the backdoor play we set up, if you miss the alley-oop dunk, or if you make a bad pass on the alley-oop, that doesn't mean the play didn't work based on how I drew it up. No. We ran it right. We just didn't finish the play, and that's on the player. Mm-hmm. Well, Bogdanović, I don't want to be too hard on the guy. I mean, 3-point shooting, if you're a 40% 3-point shooter, that's pretty decent. That means you fail 6 out of 10 times. You make it 4 out of 10. But he was wide open, and he had a second or two to actually line it up, probably too much time to think about it because he knew the season was on the line. And you're either a GOAT or a hero. And he shoots it, and it was just short. And he misses, and the season is over just like that. And the Jazz lose the series 4-2. The Mavericks, they take a deep sigh of relief because that was a great play call by Quinn Snyder. And just goes to show you that some of these coaches are brilliant. And that was a brilliant play call. It worked to perfection. The only thing that didn't work was the player missed the three. And I know he feels horrible because he missed a wide-open shot. Listen, great players miss wide-open shots all the time. Sometimes it's worse to have too much time to line up a shot. Bogdanović was wide open. It was a tremendous play call by the coach. And if that shot goes down, everybody's talking about what a play call by Quinn Snyder, what execution, and we're going to Game 7. The Jazz have all the momentum. Instead, we're not talking about that play call nationally by many people today because the guy missed a wide open shot, but we should be, because whether that shot goes in or out, that was one hell of a play call by Quinn Snyder, and his team executed it to perfection. The only thing was the 24-foot three-pointer just off.
A couple of things. Number one, we get fascinated when Kobe or Michael Jordan or somebody hits that game-winning shot. Shots to win a game, I bet it's 2-3. It's 2-1 are missed.
It's more than that.
So then, number two, there's metrics that probably put that shot with time and space and all that. He's probably closer to 50% on that type of shot.
That wide open
shot.
I think you're right.
And the pro, you know, professionals, they're in the league a few years. It's not going to phase him because he knows that's a 50-50. I'm going to make a lot of those. I'm going to miss just as many because that's the nature of the game. They call it a make or miss league.
Yes, it is.
And that's a perfect example. And he's going to shoot that shot again, and he's not going to hesitate. And he's going to make some, and he's going to miss some. That one just so happened to come at the end of the game. You're right. The coach made a good one. You know, they could have very well drawn something up for Donovan Mitchell to drive into the basket, and the Mavericks, that's probably what
and the Mavericks
the defense
keyed
was.
On Mitchell. Yep. They're all over him, yep. And the Mavericks did exactly what Quinn Snyder thought they did.
Mm-hmm. And then so now you've got a 50-50 proposition on that wide open three, and
he just missed it.
Just missed it.
Bogdanovich on the season's made 181 three-pointers, 39% from three. That's a great shot for an NBA player. A wide-open look. You usually don't get that wide-open of a look on an out-of-bounds play with 4 seconds to go. And it was just perfectly executed, but the shot did not go. And that's the difference between winning championships and losing championships sometimes. A coach can drop all the right plays, but it just simply comes down to make or miss, or maybe a good lucky bounce or a bad bounce.
This is exactly why a league like this is a best-of-seven
series.
That's
exactly right. That's why the NCAA tournament's a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Absolutely is. KU won the national title. If Creighton doesn't turn the ball over up one with a minute and a half to go and a dunk by Obagi, we might be talking about another flameout, and they lost in the second round to an undermanned Creighton team. The margin is so razor thin when it comes to sports. Even in the NBA last night, where it was about an inch or two difference from that shot going in, you're going game seven back to Dallas. Instead, Dallas wins and Utah's beside themselves. And Quinn Snyder, as a coach, I don't know what else you're supposed to do. I don't think you can second-guess that one. You got your team a heck of a shot to keep your season alive. Unfortunately, it didn't go down, and now you got to lament that until next training camp, unfortunately, for the Jazz. So the Mavericks will play the Suns in the West, and then the Grizzlies and T-Wolves, Game 6, is tonight. If the Grizzlies win, they close out that series, and the Grizzlies would then take on the Warriors in the second round. And as I said, it's the Heat and the Sixers, Celtics, Bucks in the East. Coming up in just a couple minutes, Dusty will have a first report from the Bullet Relay. Stay tuned. Dusty coming up in just a few minutes. Thanks for tuning in to Sports Ticket. Have a great weekend, everyone, and stay safe with all the storms that could be out there.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.